please the court. We're here on appeal today because Mr. Sampson, as a criminal defendant at trial, was convicted of possession of marijuana with intent to distribute after having not been able to enter a certificate of analysis showing that fingerprints only other than his own were on the seized drugs. Now, the certificate of analysis was provided as part of the exculpatory information that the evidence that the Commonwealth provided to Mr. Sampson. And Mr. Sampson's intention was to have it admitted into evidence, but he was prevented to do so by doing so by the application of the statute, Code of Virginia 19.2-187. Mr. Sampson's interpretation of the trial court was that that statute gives two ways for a defendant to admit certificates of analysis into evidence, one of which was to file it ahead of time with the clerk, and the other one was to be able to admit it at trial if the certificate comes from a certain number of delineated sources, one of which was the Department of Forensic Science.
Well, you concede that under 187, Romanet 1, you don't qualify.
Yes, he did not submit it ahead of time.
And so
we're relying on number, section 2, being applicable and available to him.
In number 2, the first sentence of it is the requirements of subsection A of 187.1.
Yes, so there are three components to that. There's the requirements of 187.1 must be met, the defendant must not have objected, and the certificate must have been from one of these enumerated.
It seems to me the only dispute is to whether the requirements of 187.1A have been met. And
there's potential that 187.1 could have been met, but the certificate could not have been from one of the enumerated sources.
I don't take the Commonwealth has any objection to the second and third elements. They're saying that a criminal defendant can never meet the requirements of 187.1A because of the prefatory language in the statute. But let's assume for a moment you could. Then there are three things that had to have happened for the requirements of the statute to be met. And I take it you concede it wasn't filed with the clerk, which is one of the things that had to have been done.
You concede that there was no attempt made to comply with Section 1 of the statute.
Well, no, but 187.1A requires three things as well. And one of the things it requires, 187.1A3, is that it assumes the Commonwealth is doing this. The Commonwealth must file a copy of the certificate and notice with the clerk of court hearing the matter on the day that the certificate and notice are provided to the accused, or in the case of a breath test, which this isn't. That 187.1A3, that was not done, correct?
Well, yes.
I mean, just as a factual matter, setting aside who should have done it, who could have done it, it wasn't done.
Yes, you're right.
If you concede that that wasn't done, then how can you argue that the requirements of subsection A 187 have been satisfied?
Well, the argument is that 187.1 imposes requirements only on the Commonwealth when they seek to admit it.
And that those last words you said were important to me. The Commonwealth, if they seek to admit it, doesn't 187.1 apply when the Commonwealth is going to seek to admit it, not when, as in your case, the defense is?
So, yes, so it's a block of text that I think it applies to 187, Section 2, when, Section 2 is being the path that we're going forward. And it's a block of text that imposes certain requirements on the Commonwealth. So it can be failed, it can fail to have been met if the Commonwealth is proceeding along Section 2 and they don't adhere to it. And if the defendant is proceeding along Section 2, then those requirements are trivially met because they don't apply, they don't impose requirements on the defendant.
Well, except they're not met. I mean, the three things that the statute requires were not done.
Yes. The argument is that they're required of the Commonwealth when the Commonwealth uses it, but they're not required of the defendant.
But the statute, the plain language of the statute doesn't even suggest that. It says that Section 2 can only work if these requirements have been met. And your argument that, well, I can't meet them because I'm not the Commonwealth, doesn't that suggest that that's only an avenue for the Commonwealth?
Well, I disagree. I might be facing an uphill battle here. But the idea is that, both sections of the 187 statute have some requirements that apply to Commonwealth, some applied to the defendant. I guess specify which sorts of hearings they can be held at, and among other things, they have these extra requirements in 187, section 2, that come in from 187.1. And so the defendant must meet all requirements of the statute that are applicable to both the defendants and the Commonwealth, must meet all sections of the statute that are applicable to the Commonwealth. Such that, you know, if the Commonwealth were trying to use section 1 at trial, they wouldn't have met the requirement that, you know, that section 1 is available to the Commonwealth only for dealing with hearings. But if the defendant uses section 1 at trial, then, you know, the requirement that it be a prelimin hearing applies only to the Commonwealth does not affect the defendant there. And you say that, you know, the insertion of 187.1 into section 2 of the statute is similar to that in that it shows that what the Commonwealth must do if they want to use section 2, but it doesn't hinder a defendant from meeting section 2 so long as they met all the other.
How do you get around the requirement in 187 that requires basically the party who is going to be using the certificate of analysis to have filed it? The words or the accused. If the attorney for the Commonwealth intends to offer it into evidence, or the accused intends to offer it into evidence in any hearing or trial.
Yeah, so the Commonwealth has argued that or any hearing and trial is sort of exhaustive, in that because it's there, any other, you know, options that are listed, if there were a section 2 or a section 3, it doesn't matter, they're all unavailable to the defendant. However, that's
kind of an ordinary reading of the word any, isn't it?
Well, not quite so much. So imagine a section in which there were, you know, two options for a defendant to use in any circumstance. The fact that, you know, section 1 is available in any circumstance doesn't mean that there can't be an option 2, 3, 4 that are also available in any or some circumstances. It would just mean that, say, if there were another section available to defendant in preliminary hearings.
And that may make sense if then when you didn't go to section 2, it doesn't reference 187.1A, which is specifically limited to any trial or hearing other than a preliminary hearing in which the attorney for the Commonwealth intends to offer a certificate. I mean, those are pretty significant words of limitation when it comes to a defendant's argument, because you've been given a vehicle for you actually have two ways to introduce that certificate. You can do it by filing ahead of time, and then you don't have to call the scientist, but you could have called the scientist too, couldn't you?
Yes, that's true as well. At the trial court, you know, the decision was made, or interpretation was made, that we have the Section 2 option as well, and that this, you know, certificate that's supplied by the Commonwealth can be introduced along those lines. I think we might have reached sort of an impasse upon this interpretation. I just want to hit a little bit more broadly, though. There's case law that I've cited in the written section stating going over the purpose of the statute, and you know, among the goals, well, certainly it was amended to accommodate Melendez Diaz, but what is probably more pertinent here is Stokes v. Commonwealth says that the purpose of having this, you know, these rules be filed is that the certificate of analysis has to be timely available to the other party in the proceeding. And, you know, certainly being required to be filed ahead of time.
But is it the key for it being timely available so they can make a decision? They know it, whether it's going to be used or not, so they can make a decision whether they want to subpoena the scientist.
Well,
and so knowing it exists, but knowing it is nice, but knowing whether you need to call somebody to rebut something that's in it, or say the fact that it was, that I wouldn't expect fingerprints to be on a bag that's at somebody's feet, because shoes don't leave fingerprints. To have to call the scientist, to know I should do that, I need to know that it's going to be used, not just that it exists.
Well, yeah. In circumstances like this, though, when the Commonwealth introduces a certificate or provides it to the defense as part of its Brady materials, you know, I think we can you know, put a little bit of burden on the Commonwealth to use their intuition and common sense as to whether this is something that can be useful for a defendant. Another thing I want to hit before my time runs out is that the Commonwealth has argued that this would be harmless error, in part because their theory about the use of drugs, they believe that the circumstantial evidence is strong enough that fingerprints are not Mr. Sampson would have been convicted. However, responding to what you said earlier, you know, this was at Sampson's feet in the car. However, you know, these bags have to be transported somewhere, somehow.
On harmless, the harmless error argument is essentially the fingerprints would have shown that the other passenger, the person in the car, clearly exercised dominion and control, and that at least suggests I didn't.
Yes, so the suggestion that, and also the Commonwealth have a theory that the reason Mr. Sanganat, the other person in the car, had $1,000 and Mr. Sampson did not is that Mr. Sampson must have just bought the drugs. But the lack of fingerprints on the drugs make it sound somewhat absurd that Mr. Sampson would spend $1,000 buying this product sight unseen, having not inspected it. So I do believe that the harmless error is a less persuasive argument on the Commonwealth's behalf. I do think the sticking point here is whether or not Section 2 of 187 can be available for defendants. The scheme that we've argued is that there's a two-part here, that it is coherent and makes sense. There's a Section 1 that you can file in advance and give advance notice to the Commonwealth to have it admitted to trial, or Section 2, the certificate comes from the Commonwealth to begin with, it comes from the number of enumerated labs that the Commonwealth controls, and that defendant in these circumstances would only have this evidence because it was previously forwarded to the defendant by the Commonwealth. And in those circumstances, there's no actual surprise to the Commonwealth to have them appear at trial. I'll reserve the meeting 3 minutes or seconds. Yeah.
Good morning, Ms. Adelphio. You have 15 minutes as soon as we get the clock set.
May it please the court. Good morning. Catherine Adelphio on behalf of... I apologize, Your Honor. May it please the court. Good morning. Catherine Adelphio on behalf of the Commonwealth. Sampson here today asks this court to ignore the plain language of Code Section 19.2-187. This code section's language is both unambiguous and clear. Clause 1 clearly applies to Commonwealth seeking to admit certificates of analysis prior to preliminary or at preliminary hearings. And Clause 1 also applies to the defendant who seeks to admit certificates of analysis prior to any proceeding. The General Assembly's use of the word any, this court should assume was purposeful. This court should assume that the General Assembly knows what the word any means, that the word any encompasses basically all proceedings, that it has an expansive meaning, and that the dictionary definition and its regular, ordinary meaning is what the General Assembly intended.
Given the language of the statute, is it ever possible for a defendant to meet the requirements of 187.1A?
I would say it's not, Your Honor.
And were those requirements met in this case?
And they were not, as Your Honor has pointed out. My next point was that 187.1 only applies to the Commonwealth. There's a reason why the General Assembly excluded the defendants from that code section. We can assume that that was a purposeful exclusion and that it signals an intent to exclude defendants from using code section 19.2-187.1. The defendant's reading of Clause 1 and Clause 2 essentially renders Clause 1 meaningless. It renders it useless. It means that the word any does not actually mean anything. Given that, I would suggest that under the plain language of the statute, the defendant was required to submit the certificate of analysis prior to 7 days, or 7 days prior to the proceeding. In any event, even if the trial court erred by refusing to admit the certificate, any such alleged error was harmless. The evidence against Mr. Sampson was overwhelming. His unwillingness to touch the bag that was between his feet indicates guilty knowledge of its contents. He had other indicia of possession and distribution on his person, to include the three cell phones on his person. His general behavior and nervousness and evasive answers indicate is also circumstantial evidence that he possessed the drugs with the intent to distribute them. And unless the court has any other questions, I'd ask that you affirm the decision of the trial.
Thank you. Well,
thank you very much.
Mr. Conaway, you have 3 minutes and 27 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Give or take.
So, I think we have heard another formulation of the any argument, and I do think I made this full of the initial argument that the fact that one option is available in any circumstance doesn't necessarily mean that other options cannot be available in some subset or the same subset of circumstances. I think there's no annihilation of the word, the meaning of the word any in the interpretation of the statute. And then I also want to address some of the harmless error argument as well. The suggestion that the fact that Mr. Sampson was unwilling to touch the bag and the fact that he had multiple cell phones suggests that he at least had possession of this large drug bag. I'm certainly willing to concede that Mr. Sampson, was familiar with marijuana. He also had a personal bag he would have. The question, though, is this specific larger bag his? And if it wasn't, he'd have the same amount of, incentive not to touch it because that would create fingerprint evidence that wasn't there that could help him show that this is, the driver and owner of the car's bag and not his. So I don't think that's probative in the way that would make this, inability to get the fingerprint evidence in as a harmless error. Finally, I'd like to suggest the argument that, our interpretation of the two sections of 187 render clause one useless. I disagree with that because even under defendant's interpretation, there are circumstances in which two can be met, and there are circumstances in which clause two cannot be met, and one must be used.
When would a defendant ever go under one? Because under one, I have to tell the Commonwealth I'm going to use it. And under your interpretation of two, I don't have to tell them that, and I get the element of surprise. Why would you ever use one?
So, my experience has been representing indigent defendants who don't have the private resources. But if there is a defendant who has resources to get a private testing of material that is in controversy done, we could have a certificate of analysis performed other than by the Commonwealth. And there would probably be a process ahead of time to get access to it, given to this private lab, and can be submitted. The defendant who wishes to challenge the Commonwealth's certificate analysis by producing one of his own would have done that. And in those circumstances, the Commonwealth would not have advanced access to the certificate, and it makes perfect sense to require the defendant to file in advance so that there is no surprise and his ability to review what is submitted. And I'll yield the rest of the time. Thank you.
Consistent with the traditions of the court, we'll come down and recount.
All rise.